anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Hi there, this is Sue. Once again, Anomaly Supplemental falls on a holiday weekend, so I am bringing you another panel from DragonCon. This is another one on the American Sci-Fi Classics track called Roll a Panel, where we talk about everything from Waterworld to Apollo 13. Now, because panelist introductions are done in the recording, as well as the full description of the concept of this panel, and as you can probably hear, I'm fighting off a bit of a cold, I'm just going to stop talking now and get you right to the panel. But really quickly, I just need to thank Michael Faulkner of the Weekly Podioplex podcast on the Chronic Rift Network for this audio, because it was Sunday morning at DragonCon and I forgot to record it. So enjoy and happy holidays.
Okay, so what we do here
company.
Is year two, and your co-track director there, Mr. Gary Mitchell.
Hi!
And I put together for months, we try to narrow down the scope of what we want to do every year. And all we have is the entire history of sci-fi movies and TV.
Star Trek, Star Wars, and Stargate.
Except for Star Trek, Star Wars, Stargate.
And anything Wheaton's had his dirty little mitts on.
Yeah. Yep. But all that stuff, it turns out there's a lot. And so what we did was we have put together 20 panels that we didn't have time to do any time this weekend.
We also spent about a month working on that list.
Yes.
There are things that didn't make
the
die.
Of the list.
Yeah, there are things that didn't make it to the die.
You present.
No, no, Sue, hold it up again.
Joe, I got to ask a question. So, is that the same dice from last year, just rewrapped with new categories?
Yes.
So you build on it every year, like the foil ball in Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Sure.
That is a brand new die made by that gentleman right there.
Oh, it's brand new?
Yeah.
Brand new. And that gentleman makes it for us.
So there's an addition each year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, guys.
Well,
eventually, we're going to have as many dice as anywhere.
Yeah, here's a little something about the classic track. This should tell you a little something about me and how prepared we are. How prepared I am.
Okay.
Mr. Dungeon Master here made another die for our neighbors at the American Sci-Fi Fantasy and Fantasy Media.
Also known as Our Future.
Yeah, all of that stuff comes here eventually. Like entropy. They have an awesome die too, like a Game of Thrones die. They auctioned it off for charity. We're keeping ours.
True charity. You can't have
no.
it.
That's how we roll.
They have
charity. This is.
We'll give it to somebody. All right, so let's go down the line and introduce. These are basically the classic track irregulars, you guys. So introduce yourselves, plug your stuff, and then we'll get started.
Let's start with the back row.
My name is Michael French. I run Retro Blasting with this fine young lady right here. We're a YouTube channel. We've been online for 3 years, and we deconstruct 80s cartoons and toys. So.
And do it wonderfully.
Thank you.
Awesome.
And I'm Melinda, and I'm his partner.
Yay!
I'm Kevin. I co-host a podcast called The Flopcast. It comes out every week. Flopcast.net. It is Do I need the mic? Hello?
Hey, it works!
Do anything?
Yeah.
It sounds exactly the same from up here.
Can nobody not hear?
Okay. I like it because I feel more like Gene Rayburn.
Exactly.
Bob Barker, yeah. The Flopcast is very silly and very nerdy, and it's very much like what we discuss here in this track room all weekend.
Hi,
Hi, my name is Sue. I am a blogger and podcaster over at anomalypodcast.com, which is general geek topics all talked about by women. It's an all-ladies show. And I am also one of the hosts of the Parsec Finalist Women at Warp, which is a feminist Star Trek podcast. And I have cards for that.
It's an awesome podcast.
Oh, they have microphones.
We have microphones.
What's happening? Working microphones?
Look, it's Wednesday. I was going to say it's Wednesday morning.
Or not.
Or not. I don't think they actually work.
I don't think they're on.
It's just a problem.
Hello? Is it working?
That one's on.
Okay.
Low.
Okay,
it's on.
Yeah, it's
on.
They're low, but they're working.
Yeah.
My name is Michael Faulkner. I'm with the Chronicriff Network, where I help find the culture in pop culture. I run a podcast called The Weekly Podioplex, which covers movie news. I'm also blogging my adventures with Doctor Who. I started at the very beginning, watching every episode for the very first time, and writing about them little things called timestamps. That's at creativecriticality.wordpress.com.
I am James Palmer. I am not a podcaster, but I've been on a few. I'm a writer and editor and publisher of science fiction and pulp adventure. This is some of my stuff. I'm probably best known for this one. This is Monster Earth. This is the Cold War fought with giant monsters instead of nuclear weapons. I also have some ebooks up here, just pulpy, sci-fi, fantasy, horror goodness.
What about the one with the mummy and the robot? Is that your stat?
No, I am out of those.
Yes, a book about a mummy fighting a robot.
Yeah. I have a collection of my stories called Into the Weird, and one of them is a robot fighting a mummy on a train, and it's Joe's favorite story. Yeah. You gotta have the train.
Monster Earth is really
it's
good.
It's niche.
Best book ever.
Please, exactly.
Please tell me the title is Throw Mummy from the Train.
No! Darn it! Why did I think of that? It's actually Mummy Train. Probably least imaginative.
James, you have to go!
That's the sequel.
You can reissue it with a new title, and it's a special edition.
That's true.
No, no, no.
Sequel.
Throw mummy from the
sequel. No, like a bigger, better robot and a bigger, better wrapped mummy.
No, I like the idea of a special edition with more dewbacks. Right. That'd be great.
Yeah.
So,
I don't even know where to start from mummy. My name is Tegan. I have a website, justtegan.com, and I also am the newly minted co-host of the Rev News. I'm really excited about that. And I appear frequently on the Revcast, and I live on the internet.
And also freshly petted by Terry Farrell.
Yeah, I got hugged and petted by Terry Farrell yesterday, a.k.a. Judzia Dax. So
I got hugged and high-fived.
Awesome.
Yeah, you didn't get the hair out of there.
Okay, now it's a Farrell off. Okay.
Just saying.
And James, Terry Farrell was sitting in your chair.
Yeah, she was right there, and it was...
But petting is not allowed from you.
Yeah, no.
No,
should I take it another direction? I'm John Barrowman's executive pants manager.
I bet he keeps you busy.
I'm Michael Bailey, and I've never met Terry Farrell, but I'm sure she's a lovely woman. And I have barely a knowledge of who John Barrowman is, but I host a bunch of different podcasts, Views from the Long Box, From Crisis to Crisis, Bailey's Batman Podcast, Tales of the JSA, because I really like comics, and I apparently have free time.
I'm Gary Mitchell, Yes Really, and I am, along with Joe, the co-director of this track, I am the host of the Rev News, and co-host of the Revcast for RevolutionSF.com, where I write reviews and stuff, apparently. It's been a little bit, but I do podcast frequently.
And all of these things, we're going to post links to everything on our Facebook group.
I just want to know why Mike Gordon's not up here.
He's going to end up rolling something.
I can't stand.
Mike Gordon's taking it easy.
So I'm in reserve.
You can have my chair if you want.
If anybody gets injured...
He's the understudy.
He's our reserve panelist.
He's on the turnbuckle, holding on to the tag team rope.
He's panelist emeritus.
Exactly.
He's going to come in and knock Stardust around.
So we're going to let you guys in the audience... roll the giant 20-sided die. And then what happens is we, the assembled panelists, do a lightning round mini panel about the thing we roll. And everything on the die is stuff that is celebrating some kind of anniversary this year. I think it's 20, 25, 30. There's one of them that's 50. And so it's.
And I really, really hope that one comes up. The reaction every time.
I hope one comes up. I hope critical fail one comes up because I can't wait to talk about Battlefield Earth.
Oh God!
Oh God! You're the only one.
All right. So who wants? Let's get the first rolling volunteer right here.
Yeah, that too.
Gentleman in the waistcoat.
There's way too many obstacles for me to do.
Yes,
that.
Indeed.
All right. Roll it. Let's see what we got.
You know, whammy.
Yeah.
What do we got?
That was close.
Number three, Judge Dredd.
The Stallone version.
You knew you were in trouble with this movie when there's this giant action scene at the beginning and Sylvester Stallone steps out of his vehicle and the first line is, I am the law. You are breaking the law. And I knew, okay, so it's Inspector Clouseau as Judge Dredd. Perfect.
I knew we were in trouble when Rob Schneider was the better actor. I said it.
Yeah, Deuce Bigelow and Rambo make a movie together. I think the funny thing about that film is that visually, when you're looking at the way they designed the characters, like the costuming and everything, if you saw it in stills, you'd swear, hey, this is going to be okay.
Yeah.
And then you watch the film and you're like, oh, he took his helmet off like 10 minutes in and he never puts it back on.
What was that?
It sucks. Yeah.
So, or it's like, oh, God, this picture has movement.
He doesn't need an extra speech impediment with the mask in front of his face, because then none of us would have known what the hell he was saying.
And it also suffered from the fact they were trying to cram, like, 8 different classic Dredd storylines in the one movie.
Yeah.
And just... Although I will give them credit. Mean Machine Angel, they got him right. Mm-hmm. And I like the big Schwarzenegger robot. That was pretty cool. And, you know, I never thought I would see someone eat as much scenery as Armando Sante does as Rico. It's like anything that didn't have Stallone's teeth in it, he finished off.
In some ways, this movie, the Stallone version, was more accurate to the comics than the later Dredd.
Well,
Judge Dredd, the comics, it's satire and it's crazy, goofy, over the top quite a bit of it, whereas I thought the Dredd, the more recent one, was just so dark and serious, and you didn't see a lot of the crazy, silly aspects of Mega City 1 from the comics. And the Stallone version, you did get some of that.
Yeah, they kind of put the nail in the coffin of that side of the comics, because there was no way they could even have a hint of satire in the new one. Otherwise, it would have been I'm the law all over again.
Yeah.
And the one upside is that it had Diane Lane in it. Any movie is elevated with Diane Lane.
Cherry Valance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the continuing down one slide of Christopher Plummer.
Oh, we're going to get to him. If somebody rolls one of us. Yeah,
the six.
Okay.
All right. I think we have a roller.
I think we have a roller.
We have a roller.
We got a roller.
Another roller.
Let's come up here to... Yeah, let the Dungeon Master present.
I will do my best for a one.
Now here it comes. Yes!
Well, a big roll.
Whoa, right in the corner. Eight.
What is it?
Stepford Wives.
The original.
The original?
Is that 40 years?
I think so.
Okay, 40-year anniversary of Stepford Wives.
I have to say, it's definitely one of those movies that had a great impact, like, culturally, and especially in the way we looked at women and the home life. So it was a very important movie, very creepy, but incredibly important in the kind of feminist realm of things.
I think the film was actually prophetic, and I'm not even about to make a joke when I say this. It's weird that it predicted reality shows like Real Housewives of X. Like, it just predicted this kind of homogeny of our society coming to fruition. I thought that was fascinating about the movie, looking back on it 40 years later.
And it's a great example of the 70s downer sci-fi, because so many 70s movies, like, we were all bummed out anyway, so our movies had to bum us out as well and have a down ending. And, you know, how many movies, you know, then become, the title becomes a trope.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and becomes, it's the Stepford X. You know, how many Stepford knockoffs have we had off? Not just the remakes. I mean, the step for teens, the step for this, that.
But the first time you see that, the idyllic world that, you know, and then there's, you know, that sinister thing underneath that has become such a trope. But when you think about the beginning of a trope that, and the impact that has, I don't really... I mean, Tegan basically summed it up, but it was super important, and the remake was just failed in that capacity.
And that was heartbreaking for me.
Yeah, I think it was a really big product of its time. Like so many things in the 70s, they were doing so many, you know, really great new concepts in the 70s, but that particular film is like society itself is the thing to be feared. Mm-hmm. So much like so many things, even from like the late 60s through the 70s, that was a trope in so many films. And now, that's not really what we're afraid of. So it doesn't seem to carry over as much, especially because Stepford whatever is a thing now. So the horror of it is a little lost on modern audiences, I think.
Yeah.
Guess we're rolling. That gentleman right there.
See, it's not always just goofy.
Yeah, sometimes it's it's serious.
These aren't all joke movies. These are
Thank you, sir.
Not all of them.
All right, here we go. Clear.
All right, next roll.
Big bucks, no whammies.
20! Natural 20!
You win a business card. Hey! You win a business card. Have
you
a business card.
Roller,
and a button.
Sir.
You get a button.
20 is Clue.
Here, have two buttons. Woo! So what's the movie?
Clue.
Yes!
Oh, my God.
Best movie on the die.
Define best.
That's why it's the 20.
Oh, God. Clue. Where do you even start with Clue?
Yeah, Tim Curry.
Madeline Kahn. I mean,
Flames
on the side of my face.
That was totally ad-lib.
Yeah, I love,
by the way.
Yeah, if you watch Martin Mull next to her, there's a reason they cut, because that's where he starts to crack.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a phenomenal cast, and it has multiple endings. Like,
Was it one of the first movies to do that, though, with like multiple endings and multiple scenes? Or
not
places,
really,
or?
But it was one of the most well-known.
Yeah, most well-known. And I think they did a different ending in different theaters.
Yeah,
it was different
sections of the country.
And there was originally,
zones.
I believe, supposed to be an ending for everybody.
Yeah.
Oh.
And they just didn't have the budget to complete it. So
yeah,
they only did three.
Yeah.
And there are just so many great running gags of that movie.
Oh, my God.
Communism
was a
red
herring.
And it's so quotable. Like, my friends and I love going, and I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
And I don't think it gets enough credit because, you know, we a couple of years ago we had Battleship. And everyone was like, oh, they're turning a board game into a movie. But, you know, the people who made this film, one, assembled a spectacular cast. Tim Curry, yes, epic in just about anything he does, but Michael McKean has this very underplayed mm-hmm. role, but he ends up being my favorite character in the whole thing. And
he does not get enough credit.
And it's just, you know, the singing telegram and everything, and it's just...
Who's from the Go-Go's, right?
So you have
she's
this...
a singer. Anyway.
Okay.
So, yeah. Obviously, she's a singing telegram, but anyway, yeah.
But, you know, it's a cult hit... Because I remember being in and out of theaters in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it had an impact on me because my family rented it, and then we returned it and came back with the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So it was like this really weird weekend.
No kidding.
Tim Curry.
Yeah.
Party at the Bailey House.
But now we know how he gathered the blackmail.
The first character they think of when somebody mentions Tim Curry.
I watched this for the first time at a birthday party in the, I think it was the third grade.
You have awesome friends.
Thank you. And, well, the kid got Omega Supreme for his birthday. He was going to let
us. We hate him now.
But I remember when I saw it, and that was really, aside from seeing it, few years ago as an adult, that was the one time I'd seen it. It was the first time that I'd ever seen a movie, the first time where a character died and I was disappointed that they died simply because I wanted to look at her more, which was Yvette, the maid. That was like a turning point for me in my development. So.
I need a moment for Yvette.
Yeah.
Yvette.
Moment of silence for Yvette.
Yeah. Just the plot, it's the zany screwball without going, it knows the right level of over the top,
mm-hmm.
and go and hits it and stays on that mark.
Right. Well, they had, I mean, so many just classic comedic actors, and just yeah. put them on there and just let them do their thing.
Yeah. I mean, Christopher Lloyd. Mm-hmm. We.
Yeah.
I mean, Leslie the only one that Warren. Isn't. Yeah. Yeah, Leslie Ann Warren.
Yeah, good. Leslie Ann Warren. Yeah.
My delicacy in.
it has a unique flavor of being slapsticky, but not getting tired by the time it's done. There's mm-hmm. a lot of slapstick type movies. Yeah. Like it starts out funny, and then by about the hour mark, if not sooner, it just drops off. You're like, is this done yet?
Well, a lot of the slapstick happens at the end, right?
Yeah.
All that high energy stuff, all the running back and forth at the end of it, and you're just following along that energy, right? The build through the whole thing, and the I guess anxiety of what's going on.
Yeah.
And then it just turns 100% comedic at the right second.
Yeah.
And how many movies can get away with summing up the entire movie up to that point before then? And get away with that. All right, let's do it again.
Well, it was just fun watching Wadsworth just frenetic. I mean, it almost looked like one take, just running, you know, from room to room and acting everything out. It's hilarious, and dragging everybody with him. It was hilarious.
Although I still think my favorite joke is, why is Hoover on your phone? Why not? He's on everyone else's.
Oh, foreshadowing to the NSA.
So, for the next role,
Do you have any questions? Does anyone have any questions?
We have questions. Oh, then I think they want to roll.
He wants to roll.
Come on.
Sorry.
Because that's how we roll.
Because we've got so much stuff to go
through. I thought you were stimulating conversation.
It's going to be Cocoon.
I hope not.
Into the corner. Oh. Two. And that
Waterworld.
Is... Waterworld!
Oh. Do we have to?
I actually like this movie.
I like this movie.
Yes. I like this movie.
We can't be
unabashedly, unashamedly like this movie.
So somebody in a pitch meeting at Hollywood said, I want the first shot of this film to be a guy peeing into a container. I'm like, boom. And they thought that's a good idea.
That's how most Hollywood pitch meetings start, though.
Yeah. And then, not just that. After that, he has to like filter it and drink it.
Right.
You know, that was very important for the story.
Well, I appreciate what their intent was to show how bad it's gotten trying to get drinking water, but there's seawater right there. You've got
you
a filter machine.
You can filter seawater.
Clearly, you can filter things.
Clearly, he likes the pee.
It's sterile and I like the taste.
The guy Waterworld likes to drink pee.
He's green, guys. Come on, recycle.
It's a personal choice.
Now, I will... go ahead.
I thought his catamaran was awesome, though.
Yeah, he did have
all catamaran. He had all those gadgets and stuff on it. I thought that was cool.
I can't decide if it's good or bad Aquaman fan fiction.
It just seems a little flawed that the idea that civilization decides that they can recreate a continent by throwing people in a mud pit in the middle of a floating city, and eventually they'll get Idaho again or something. Like I don't know. It feels like a flawed concept that I guess in our society today I could see a government coming up with that idea, but when I watch it on screen, I'm a little distance from it. So.
And it feels a bit dated now with the whole the ship, the D's, which was the Exxon Valdez that had spilled all that oil, you know, before the movie came out. So I thought that was a little too on the nose at the time.
The
and then it instantly dates a futuristic movie.
I can see how this movie, though, really did, I mean, in all seriousness, how it really did destroy the working relationship between Costner and Reynolds. I mean, because up until that point, they were on a roll, they were collaborating, and I heard that the strain of this movie just destroyed their working relationship.
And he was on a roll at this point with 3-plus-hour-long movies. Because this was just after Dances with Wolves, and then after Waterworld, he did The Postman.
Right.
Which I also kind of enjoyed.
I liked it, too. It was his own thing. I've read the book. The book is like two different, completely different stories.
Well, I was about to say that if you watch the movie, Kevin Costner and Dennis Hopper, seem to be in two different movies.
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper always seems to be in a different movie than everybody else, though.
But at least he's a really entertaining villain mm-hmm. in Waterworld.
No, Dennis Hopper
was great.
He gives, he gives great performances.
He was playing himself.
Yeah.
In everything.
Yeah. You had a thing you wanted to say?
I was just going to say, I don't think the movie is as bad as a lot of people remember. I know financially it was not a win for the studio.
Very expensive to make, yeah.
But I think that's... Go ahead. I mean, I know it made money, but in terms of like percentages and things like that that they look at, it was considered kind of a flop financially, but I don't think it's as bad as many other films that are very popular, you know, that I won't necessarily name, but a lot of people remember other movies fondly that are much worse films.
Oh, and maybe on that die.
You are correct.
The Kenner action figure line, though, was awesome because they just ganked all the heads from Prince of Thieves. So.
What? Oh, man!
I could have had a little Dennis Hopper.
They couldn't reuse the Green Arrow mold?
Every Kevin Costner movie has, like, really cool action figures. You know, you can use the Prince of Thieves one for, you know, the Ewoks. It's the Ewoks playset, basically, mm-hmm. with like, tree leaves and things like that, so it's pretty cool.
Maybe Costner's a toy guy.
Maybe.
I make movies so I can have toys. And
he's
I
very
go,
toyetic.
I'm not going to make that joke.
The vanilla ice
factor.
It's because his face doesn't move, so they can sculpt him very easily.
He's very plasticky, so...
Yeah.
All right.
Are we rolling?
Yeah, I think lizard guy in the corner, lizard head in the corner wants to roll.
She had her hand up a couple times.
I believe that's Godzilla.
She had her hand up.
You're
for, sorry, you're
no,
next.
But no, lizard head has. Oh, she got. All right, so we're going from that side of the room to that side of the room to that side of the room. Got it.
That seems fair.
That's fair. So we'll go lizard head next.
Baby needs a new pair of shoes.
No, she doesn't.
Well, she's ready for T Rex and those.
Oh, she rolled Waterworld again.
Waterworld,
roll again.
Roll again.
Roll again.
Bonus roll.
I like this movie.
The catamaran is awesome.
Dennis Hopper is great.
17.
Death Race 2000.
Oh, wow. Talk about Corman.
The original.
And Stallone again.
Country Road Wreck.
Yeah.
That's what it says on the thing.
It was a cross-country road.
Hey, thanks for spoiling the whole movie, buddy.
Again, this is another 70s society is the problem downer film, kind of. I mean, we got Carradine as the hero who's been put together, they said, 20 surgeries from crashes and things. And an early Stallone is the bad guy, Machine Gun Joe. And just, I love the again, it's that the social satire, you know, kids are smaller, they're fast, they're worth more points.
Yeah,
and then I think my favorite scene, though, in the movie is when the hospital wheels out all the critical and old patients into the road to get run over for points for the... Okay, does anybody not know this the plot? Okay. Death Race 2000 is a cross-country race with about 30 people. All extreme characters like Machine Gun Joe, Frankenstein, they all have themed vehicles. And their object is to get from one side of the country to the other while running over as many people as possible.
So it's Cannonball Run meets Grand Theft Auto?
Yes. It's how the government keeps people is suppressed as they're all watching this reality show and excited.
Meets Hunger Games.
Yeah, meets Hunger Games. And so, you know, and the old people are worth more points because they're trying to get them out of society. Kids are small and, you know, you got mouths to feed. And so the hospital at one point wheels out all these patients into the road. And here comes our hero, David Carradine, wrapped in leather. And he just swerves at the last minute into the doctors and the nurses. And you're like, it's a great one of those of, yes, wait. Yes!
I'm conflicted.
I kind of wonder if my mom saw this movie before she started teaching me how to drive. Because she would always, like, we would kind of be joking, like, going through the car. She'd be like, okay, if we see a nun, they're worth more points. So
your parents did this too?
My mother went to
this
13
movie
years
was really
of Catholic
popular.
School.
She's
so.
Playing Grand Theft Auto, I think.
Yeah.
That's the film's legacy.
This is why I don't drive.
Because you will run over people?
No, because people who drive are terrifying.
Yes.
Also well, because I live in New York.
Wait, you're not terrifying?
Terrifying in a different way.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the things about this movie, even 40 years later, that makes it just such a great, unique cinematic experience is the same reason that I like the original Gone in 60 Seconds. Because... even though it's a low budget film, everything they're doing is on camera. The stunt work, the driving, the crashes, it's all real. It's all on camera. There's no digital car blowing up and flipping over Nicolas Cage or anything like that. Like, it's just hardcore stunt driving and action. And if you like that kind of thing and you haven't seen this movie, you've got to pick it up and watch it.
Plus, Sylvester Stallone. Like, so if you're like me, that's always a win. Like,
yeah.
Anything with him in it, even if it's really bad, I can just watch.
And
it's awesome.
And it's a Roger Corman joint. So right. It's made quickly, cheaply, and it's fun.
Okay.
We're rolling.
We're rolling.
Lizard.
Show.
Roll wisely.
Come on, one.
13.
And the Dungeon Master runs out of the way.
I forget which one Dark Man is. Dark Man.
15. Return to Oz.
Oh.
Yes. Sue, you're up.
I will take Disney point. Film. Oh, my God. This movie. How many of you have seen Return to Oz?
A few.
It is wonderful and terrifying. So my favorite movie growing up, when I was like every day, my mom would plop in the original Wizard of Oz, and I would sit there and watch it every day. So Return to Oz was obviously going to be in my wheelhouse. What we didn't understand at the time was that it was nightmare fuel. So basically, the plot is Dorothy has been talking about Oz a lot, and Aunt Em and Uncle Henry think she's gone, you know, crazy. So they decide that they're going to take her to the medical professionals to deal with this, which of course involves electricity. It's
electroshock therapy for a 12-year-old.
After all the singing of Wizard of Oz, now they're going to shock her.
Yeah, they're going. And also, Dorothy is played by Fairuza Balk.
Yes.
Otherwise known as Nancy from The Craft. So just internalize that for a moment.
And
The Worst Witch with Tim Curry. So anyways.
But that was before The Craft. She was a little bit younger then.
She was very young. And
she was like 12.
So she stages an escape from the mental hospital facility thing or something, and then she ends up back in Oz. And Oz is not what she remembers. It is now, like, super dystopia Oz. And everything has gone wrong.
Yeah, the old brick road is busted up. She doesn't have Toto. She has a chicken.
A talking
Henrietta, and in Oz, that she can talk.
Yeah, a talking chicken. And
it's almost like they made this movie now.
Yeah. It wasn't a puppet chicken. It was an actual chicken.
It was
chicken.
Actual chicken.
That could talk.
And there are so many creepy and terrifying things in this movie, like the wheelies, which are these guys who are rolling around on wheels with these hideous masks. There's actually some really great wheelie cosplayers a few years back that had the appropriate level of horrifying.
Yeah, the wheelies are awesome.
And then there was the Room of Heads with Mombi, who's like the witch who's taken over, and she has this room of different heads, and they're all like, they're for different moods, how she's feeling. You know, some people take that, you know, change their shoes. She changes her head. Again, there's just so many terrifying things in this movie, and I don't know why, but I love it. I don't know what that says about me.
TikTok is awesome.
Yes. TikTok is awesome.
I love TikTok.
How about the jury-rigged moose?
The
jury-rigged couch moose.
That they brought to life with the magic dust and flew out of the...
Seriously, castle. if you haven't seen this movie, you need to pick it up. And possibly drink some alcohol if you're legally able to do so, because that might be one of the only ways you might survive.
Do you have a question?
I do, actually. I might have heard this, and I don't know if this is true or not, but did you hear that the reason this movie is so crazy and bonkers is because they literally went back to the book?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah,
it's actually, I think it's got large chunks of Ozma of Oz in it, because Ozma is in the book. She meets her at the place where she goes to get electroshocked.
I was the only kid in my grade school at the time that was reading the Oz books. I was reading them religiously. I was reading Land of Oz, Tin Woodsman of Oz, TikTok of Oz. I still have all the paperback from Delray. And I got into as much as a fourth grade argument can go, I got into an argument with my friend, I think it was John Warner, and he was like, Wizard of Oz is better. And I said, no, Return to Oz is better. And he was like, what are you talking about? I said, because the Tin Woodsman looks like he's supposed to look, the Scarecrow looks like he's supposed to look, and they're not sitting around dancing and singing.
Yeah, like they do in the original illustrations, which I love.
Right.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just look perfect.
Yeah. So even in the fourth grade, you were that kid that's like, the book's better.
So yeah, Return to Oz, man. Nightmare fuel in the best possible way.
We got a roller.
We got a roller.
Number one.
We've done
six,
number one.
Six,
no,
six,
no. Oh, no,
six,
we haven't done number one yet.
Six.
Oh, God.
No. Nine. Cocoon.
You know, I
love this movie.
The lasting legacy of this film is that it made me realize as a young boy that old people like to do certain things that young people like to do, and it was kind of a scarring experience. Because, you know, you think of Wilford Brimley, and now you think of him as diabetes. But, you know, back then it's like, I'm going to get some. And it's just absolute. I mean, I watched this film because growing up we had HBO. And HBO would show, like, movies over and over again. It's why I still remember Los Lobos Kick Your Ass, like, word for word. And it was a Steve Guttenberg film, and people like to make fun of Steve Guttenberg, but he was a thing. He was, right. Like, he was huge. He was, like, a huge actor. And it's not a bad movie. It's just, I think, because I watched it so much, I now can't stand it.
It's in the same genre as, like, Batteries Not Included. It's a low to mid range, you know, or low to mid budget kind of sci-fi film. It's just a feel good kind of
and
flick.
And you're not like the first time I saw it, I didn't like it. I think you're expecting it to be about the aliens, and it's really not. It's about the effect the aliens' presence has on these older people. And you know, I've seen it probably a dozen times since then. I even like Cocoon: The Return.
But they kind of did the same thing. All the time. Pitched a TNG episode based on this film.
Yeah,
they did not make it.
That's a good thing.
It would point out though that the aliens just look like human beings that have been in a pool too long.
Yeah,
you know, they were, but they glowed.
Yeah, they just,
and they could fly.
Right, but they looked like just wrinkled pool thumbs. This was.
No, I'm never going to see
that.
That
describes Brian Dennehy. He's pretty good.
Who's going to roll?
Music gets you. Got
the next roller.
Yes. Here we go.
Come on.
Six,
13.
Six,
13.
Six,
13.
Six,
13.
Six.
Number 19, Dick Tracy.
Dick Tracy.
All right, you start.
Me?
Okay.
Wait, yes!
So I loved the comic book as a child. And yes. It was the first time that I was able to connect with my father because we were cleaning out my granddad's attic and I found this huge metal Dick Tracy car from the late 50s. And I realized that the movie hadn't come out yet, but I was still reading the comics, and I thought, my dad and I have something in common. And so then when the movie was announced and it was going to come out, I was really excited, and it was the summer right before I had to move to England, so we were living in a hotel. And I go see this film, and I walked away from it saying, love the colors, love the Tommy guns, wish Warren Beatty had just directed and not been Dick Tracy in it. Now I'm going to go buy some of those really ugly action figures that look like Morlocks.
The action figure line was terrible.
It was terrible, but I just, that whole summer, like, it's more about the experience of the summer of 90 almost, because they were trying to one-up Batman.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
So they're like, we're going to put yellow everywhere. We're going to have yellow toilet paper in all the restaurants with Dick Tracy branding on it. And I mean, it was just unlike any other time.
Who here had the shirt with the ticket on it?
Yeah.
But you got the free, you got to go to the free midnight show.
Right.
Ooh.
This guy right here.
And it
12:01 a.m. Wow. On whatever day it was.
Yeah. And it was
the one that had the music by Sondheim?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
And Madonna.
That stuff.
Madonna was, because Madonna was in it.
That's not the important part. The important part is Sondheim.
Right.
Yes.
But apparently Warren Beatty is just a huge Dick Tracy nut.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because
yeah,
he recently made a, was it in 2000?
Yeah.
Where he made a interview with Leonard Maltin as Dick Tracy, strictly, and it was like shown once and never again, but strictly so he could continue to hold the rights.
Right.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Dick Tracy was just such, it was such a crazy time because after Batman,
everybody wanted to do a comic book thing.
After Batman, we thought, oh my gosh, this comic book movie thing might work. And then and then the next year was just Dick Tracy. And that was it.
Right.
And it's the only movie I've ever walked out of.
Wow.
Whoa.
I hated it. And it's funny because he likes it. Like, he doesn't like it completely, but he can watch it and not get angry, whereas I watch it, and I'm just like,
oh, this is awful. Like, I remember just, like, having a visceral reaction to it in the theater. Yeah,
I didn't enjoy it either. And I saw it for free. Why didn't I walk out?
The shirt.
Exactly.
It was pre-CGI, obviously, and I thought they did a great job with the makeup, just all those free
scenes. Yeah. That's the part that I hate. I love it. There are parts of it now when I look at it knowing, like, how they... Warren Beatty clearly has a love of the original comic book series, which is admirable, although it's unfortunate that he couldn't pull himself back enough to cast someone age-appropriate and to not have his love interest in real life in the film, which is very complicated because Breathless Mahoney is not supposed to be involved. Like, he's not supposed to be interested in her. He's supposed to be, you know, faithful. But you can sense the sexual chemistry between those two people, like,
weird.
On screen. And so it's weird. It's like, no, I'm not going to be with you, but I really want to.
And I'm old enough to be your dad.
Yeah, it's creepy.
But what I liked more than the film that summer was all the stuff that came out. There was a really, really good like prestige format comic book series that came out that was excellent. And because, like, the previous year where they started showing everything Batman... They started showing this Dick Tracy cartoon from, I think, the 60s.
Yeah.
Where it was basically Dick Tracy would come in at the beginning and hand it off to some other guy. And it was awful. It was like 3 seconds above, like, Clutch Cargo animation-wise.
There's also... I'm sorry, Michael.
But it was just... It was an immersive time. And, you know, I was 14, so I wanted back... I wanted the summer of 89 again. Yeah. And it wasn't the same, but it was at least exciting.
But speaking of that cartoon, though, I assume this is on YouTube. I got it on a bootleg tape a million years ago, but there was a live-action Dick Tracy pilot from the 60s also, which is pretty crazy. I guess it was probably in the wake of that.
I have seen this,
In the opening credits of it, I don't think she's actually in the episode, but the opening credits show Eve Plum from Brady Bunch.
The makers of Batman made that Dick Tracy pilot.
Yeah.
Because they thought, okay, we're the kings of the world, baby. We got Batman. So they tried everything. They tried that and Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Which some of you may have seen.
It's a whole other story.
Oh,
amazing.
God, yes.
But that we could do that on another panel. But, that pilot is, it's like the comic strip. And it's just 20 minutes. Yep. And here's the comic strip.
The theme song, the lyrics are, Dick Tracy, he's a good cop.
Next roller.
Next roller.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, one of the things that I will say about Dick Tracy is that the aesthetics of the movie end up kind of paving the way for, like, Sin City.
Mm-hmm.
And also, thanks to that being a comic book movie, we end up getting such classics like The Phantom. So
I love The Phantom.
Oh, Billy Zane. You poor bastard.
Any movie with Patrick McGrew and it can't be all bad.
Red Al's going to make a roll.
I don't know about this because I lost on Jeopardy, but...
Credit for staying in character, sir.
Ooh. 13.
Yes! Lucky 13.
Apollo 13.
All right, Sim, you're up with that reaction.
We know what we're doing, everybody.
I love this movie.
It's a good movie.
Literally. This movie came out at a time that was sort of, like, it was really important to me. It actually came out the summer I went to space camp.
So good.
And what I love that, I mean, it's your standard, like, American will triumph over this adversity thing, but, like, it makes you want to look into the history and see what more about what was actually going on with this mission and how stressful it really, really was. And I also love that it's not just about the astronauts in the capsule. I mean, it's very much about them, but you get the view of mission control, and you get the view of the guys that were like, holy crap, we have this filter that won't fit into their air system and it needs to support three guys. This is what we have. We need to fix this.
Yeah, they dumped out just
a bunch of odds and ends. The box.
Here's what these guys have
and
up
they,
there.
And they took out their pens. Like, they don't have that up there. You can't have it in here. You know, that scene is probably my favorite scene of the entire movie.
Yeah.
Where they, like, just dump it out and we're like, we need to figure this out. Because that kind of creative problem solving is just so interesting and fascinating and exciting for me.
Yeah.
But this movie made Mission Control at that time, because things have changed, made Mission Control a goal for me and made Gene Kranz, like, my hero.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the cast in this movie.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. The cast is amazing.
I don't think it's enough credit in general. I think he is one of our greatest living actors.
Absolutely.
I adore Tom Hanks.
And to follow on what Sue was saying, too, this movie even went beyond just the heroes that were up on Apollo 13 or the ones in Mission Control. It went to the families as well and made heroes out of the wives who were waiting there on pins and needles. You know, are they going to make it out of this one? I felt, had a deep emotional bond with those scenes, too. It made you feel for those families.
I love the scene where the mother says, if it's a washing machine, it doesn't matter if it's a washing machine. If it can fly, my son can pilot it.
Yeah.
And from this, we got Tom Hanks's From the Earth to the Moon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Which is an excellent TV series. But no, this is one of those movies where right from the jump with the opening music, you're in love with it. I literally, every time I'm flipping through channels and this is on, I don't care what part of the film. It could be like the first 10 minutes. It could be, they're crashing it, back into the atmosphere. I will watch it. Just because I love the actors, and it's kind of a fun spot the actor thing too, because it's like Mark McClure's in it, like Jimmy Olsen from Superman, and the kid from Real Genius is in it as well. I mean, it's one of those things where everything came together at the right time with the right cast and the right director to produce an American classic.
It was fun seeing Gary Sinise and Tom Hanks again
for
Forrest Gump too, even though they're not on screen together.
And they shot this in zero gravity. They used one of those planes that does the parabolic.
The vomit comet.
Oh, by the way, we did a story about the vomit comet when I worked at the newspaper, and I got in trouble for including the word vomit in a newspaper headline.
It's dramatized, right? It's technically a dramatization, but it's really not that exaggerated because the Apollo 1, like the fire in the spacecraft, was not that long beforehand. Mm-hmm. And that happened because NASA was pushing. And they were like, we need to beat Russia. We need to do this as quickly as possible. And like the Gemini missions, the astronauts designed it and oversaw the building of these capsules. When it got to Apollo, NASA was like, we need this done fast. And they basically outsourced the creation of their capsules. And they almost went on with the Apollo program after the fire in the Apollo 1 capsule without redesigning the capsules.
Oh, dear God.
Seriously, they didn't want to pause the program. And it was the wives of the astronauts who were lost who went in and lobbied and made a big deal and had lawsuits that paused that program. After the fire, the first manned mission was Apollo 8. We were on the moon at Apollo 11. This happened to Apollo 13, and they were all really close together. So this was, it was a rush, and it was a technological rush, and they really were going too fast. So you can say that something like this was bound to happen, because it's what happens when you rush something. You don't pay attention to all the details. And I think it's important that we as people of this country know this kind of thing about the space program, but also realize how much we need the space program, because now nobody cares about it and we're depending on other countries to get us to the International Space Station. And this is where I get political, but yay NASA.
Wants to roll.
And that's going to be followed by Congo.
If you're interested in more of this, Gene Kranz has written a book called Failure is Not an Option, which focuses on this a lot.
There's also
a book called The Astronaut Wives Club. They made a TV show out of it,
but the
book is nonfiction. So read that too, because that's amazing stories.
She did it! I don't feel Earth.
Okay. Why? Okay. The daughter of James Palmer, number one. It is with the one.
Here's my story for Battlefield Earth, right? It was on cable one time. I'm watching it on cable, and I'm sitting there from the very beginning like, this is really an interesting concept. This is kind of cool. This is... And then
on Travolta.
Wait a second. Hang on. And then it ended, and then it was on a loop. They're doing the marathons again. So it starts over. Like, well, I'm going to watch it again, because that was kind of cool. I'm going to do it. No. God, no. No. Turn it off. It was one of those where it was like an interesting concept at first for my younger brain. I was like, I can see where this could go. And then when it was replaying again, it was like,
why am I watching this?
It's not I think even, that was what everybody was thinking.
It's not even fun to watch being riffed.
I don't know. I think it's kind of fun on riff tracks. Like, yeah, that's the only way I can get through it.
The when I was in middle school, whenever the novel came out, it had the little foil sticker that said, soon to be a major motion picture. That was a threat. You'd be threatened on the cover of a book.
I was always intimidated by the book because I mean it's like this. It's yeah. so
well,
freaking huge.
It's a doorstop.
Yeah.
It's 1,066 pages.
Yes.
And I know that because I finished it, and it was a nightmare.
So you're saying the book is not better than the movie?
No.
Is the movie better than the book?
No.
They somehow managed to be worse than each other.
The movie is...
It's like strapping a buttered toast to the back of a cat. It's this rotating engine of awful.
What?
You ever heard that? You invent anti-gravity because butter always lands... Toast always lands butter side down. Cat always lands on his feet.
No,
so he's strapped to butter toast.
Whoever popularized the idea of cats being graceful
but
had never met a cat.
What happened was, I was a reader like tons of you guys, and this book was like my Moby Dick. It was like a challenge. Like, that's 1,066 pages. Oh, I'm going to finish it. And get this, even my English teacher said, no, stop. don't finish it. But then,
don't do this to yourself. You have so much to live for.
This is the greatest after school
like
special ever.
Because I stopped at one point and I was like, nah! And then finally I had to slog through it and finish it. And then they finally made the movie. And every character in that movie is like a garbage sack of mayonnaise.
I mean, this is a movie that almost totaled Travolta's career. It completely totaled the poor guy who had the lead. It almost totaled Forrest Whitaker's career.
Oh, poor Forrest.
Is that where he got the eye?
I think that's where he got the eye, yeah. You saw the movie and it just... Ah!
People give the movie 4 a lot of crap for Dutch angles, those rotated scenes with the camera.
The entire movie
of Battlefield Earth is not only Dutch angles, but during the middle of a scene, it'll be like this, and then do this, and then back again. Seasick watching this movie.
Everyone is on
stilts.
They're on stilts, and the cod pieces.
If I never hear Travolta say the man animal again,
or his best delivery,
and they were planning a sequel, and I'm sure. Travolta
it ends on that we're coming back note.
Yeah, it's like hot dog. Was that the reaction they wanted from us? Hot dang! Can't wait for Battlefield Earth 2.
Well, and you can tell John Travolta had fun. This was his dream movie because he's a Scientologist and he wanted to bring this out and he was all about Battlefield Earth for like years.
But it's like his worst acting ever.
Yeah.
Which is saying a
this
lot.
Is saying a lot.
This isn't cheesy. This is worse than
his best worst delivery in his career is in that movie.
What would you?
Where he grabs the rat and he's like, do you want lunch?
Not anymore. I'm good now.
I may never eat again. Thank you.
Open my mouth.
So much.
I just want to know what pilots, but specifically Harrier pilots, think of this movie.
Right. None of us are one.
Cavemen who learn to fly Harriers.
And that's straight out of the book, by the way.
Straight out of the book.
Here's my story with the book. It was like this thick. I took an exact. I wanted to read it because it's a sci-fi novel, whatever. But I didn't want to carry this tome around, so I took an X-Acto blade and split it in half. And I made sure to lose the second half.
The funny thing about that is, there was a lot of criticism about Jurassic World for them being able to start those jeeps after 20 years and escape from the dinosaurs. Well, these Harrier jets, I've been sitting around for how long?
Too, right?
The oil seals are still fine. Sure, there's no problems with the internal components. I got a classic car that sat for there's 8 months and started leaking, so I don't know how that works.
Yeah, that's true.
It's actually a car commercial. So
right.
What they're saying is if you buy this Jeep,
right,
it'll still work in 20 years.
So if you buy a Harrier, it will still work centuries from now.
I guess so.
Dust it off. Fight John Travolta.
That's why we're keeping them all in the desert in Arizona, right?
Right, right.
All right. Next roll.
Last roll.
Yeah. Oh, is this the last roll? Are we on time?
We got last roll.
Last roll.
Last roll.
We'll say last roll.
I really hope it's the one you want.
I really want six.
Dark Man.
Six.
Or Thundercats.
I don't care. I get to talk about Apollo 13.
So close, but it is 11. It is Teen Wolf.
Ooh. Man, this is when Michael J. Fox is on a roll.
I love Michael
this, this is a funny movie to me because it's where my worlds start colliding. Because the guy that wrote the Batman: The Long Halloween, Dark Victory, Hush, Superman for All Seasons, co-wrote this movie, Jeff Loeb. Mm-hmm. And when they started making this film, Michael J. Fox was not popular. In week three, they moved Family Ties from whatever night it was on to right after the Cosby Show,
and mm-hmm. became part of that Thursday night
juggernaut, NBC.
And suddenly, the extras were just going crazy over him. I like this film because it was an example of somebody in the 80s taking a concept, you know, I was a teenage werewolf, and turning it into the quintessential 80s film. You had the friend, Styles, who was all wacky. You had the girl he kind of liked. You had the blonde that he did like but shouldn't like. I mean, it's actually a very endearing movie that has one Easter egg at the end. Does everybody know about the scene at the end?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With the dude dropping his pants while everyone's cheering after Michael J. Fox makes the final basket?
Yeah, actually,
yeah. Yeah, some dude drops his pants. It's on YouTube. Don't watch it.
The story I love from behind the scenes of this movie is that Michael J. Fox was filming this movie in the neighborhoods in Pasadena and saw them location scouting for Back to the Future. And he asked his crew members who were in the know, what's going on? And they said, they're scouting for another movie that Steven Spielberg is producing. And he was like, gosh, I wish I could be in a movie like that. And then, sure enough, he ends up being in that film, which I just love that story.
That's pretty cool.
I came to this, I came late to the party for this movie. I didn't see it when it came out. I didn't see it until after I had seen the Teen Wolf cartoon, which is a very different animal, pardon the pun. He still has to keep his wolf identity a secret, and he has these really cool old world grandparents that are always running around in wolf form, and his grandpa gets up on the roof and he's howling at the moon, and his granny's making goulash, and everything's all crazy, and he's got to keep his wolfing out a secret. So when I saw the movie, I was like, what in the world? But I like it now. I appreciate it for what it is. It's about popularity. And
yeah.
I have to respect Styles' T-shirts.
Yes.
I have to respect every scene, different shirt.
Yes.
And without saying a word, Teen Wolf's dad, when Styles walks in behind him, he goes, nice shirt, Styles. Didn't even see it. He knows.
Not sure. I love the dad in this movie.
The dad relationship is pretty much the best thing in the movie.
When he faces off against the principal at the end of the film, that's the ultimate don't mess with my kid thing. That was just fantastic.
Oh, yeah. And I just had a brilliant idea to wrap this thing up. I want everyone to act like Teen Wolf and say, I want a case of beer.
They were going to do that anyway.
Keg of beer.
This is Dragon Con. Is a case enough?
So many.
All right. Everybody, turn to the camera and do the Teen Wolf thing. Like, I want a keg of beer. Everybody, and
I want a keg of beer.
Yes, thank you.
That'll be on YouTube later, whether you like it or not.
So here's what we didn't get to. I'll just run this by. Wait, we didn't get to Batman Forever.
Better than Batman Returns.
I know, the Galactica 1980.
Yeah.
Let's see. Thundercats.
Kid Hangover.
And the original Time Machine.
Ooh. Yeah.
One, but we did get to Battlefield Earth.
No Darkman either.
No Darkman, no Congo.
We didn't get to Darkman. And we didn't get to number six, the most infamous one on the die, apparently, The Sound of Music.
Just Julie Andrews.
It's 50th anniversary.
People have walked out of this room furious that The Sound of Music is on our sci-fi classics die.
She was fighting Nazis before Indiana Jones.
Yes.
How is that sci-fi? That's just Julie Andrews being Bamf.
It has Penny from Lost in Space.
And Spider-Man.
And Spider-Man. The musical is automatically a fantasy.
And if you...
Right. Because nobody starts singing and knows the words.
Right. I do.
But I did make this happen because it was awesome. Friday night, we do the Friday night sci-fi drive-in, and we did Star Crash with Christopher Plummer from Sound of Music. So I got the whole crowd to sing Edelweiss. Ladies and gentlemen, and that's the video. We'll post it.
I hate The Sound of Music.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed, right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I do not strike you as a geek.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z. @gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental News, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the @ Anomaly Podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's AnomalyPodcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at MarionCall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
World is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh, I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend, and I still be a geek.